Welcome to Local Matters. I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt, talking today with Ms. Kim Dillon, interim director of Overton County Schools, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you. I know you haven't
been before. I appreciate you coming. Talked to lots of different people, so lots of different people in education, and so this is my segment. I just get to talk about education, talk about you a little bit and your history. We were just talking with the last guest about some of the things that we're doing at Tennessee Tech and some of the things that have changed in education. So we'll work through. So introduce yourself. Tell me a little bit about you and how you got into education, how long you've been teaching, what you've taught.
Okay, so I've been in education for about 23 years. I started out at Livingston Middle School as a middle school teacher. I taught ELA for the entire time I was there, coached basketball for 10 years, coached boys basketball for 4 years. Then I left Livingston Middle School, became a principal at Hillham Elementary, did that for about 7 years, and now I'm the secondary supervisor at our central office, as well as serving as the interim director.
Okay, while you're working through the interviews and all of those things to sort that out. So one of the questions, and I think I probably asked Mr. Dronbarger this same question, did you ever think I might be director of schools one day, even interim? You know, I don't think that people typically in the school system set out to do that. So did you go to Tennessee Tech?
I did.
Okay, so when you were at Tennessee Tech and you're getting ready for student teaching, did you have a goal of saying, I want to be supervisor of instruction, I want to be director of schools?
So I'm going to say no, but my husband will say, yes, I did. He says that I said, one day I'll be director. I do not remember saying that, but he swears that I said that. As a teacher, I thought I would be a teacher forever. When I became a principal, I thought I would retire at Hillham. Then I was asked to come to the central office, and I love being the secondary supervisor. I love everything about my job. Licensure is, I don't know why, but I seem to absolutely love licensure. So did I ever think at this point in my life that I would be director? No. Or even interim director or interviewing for director. But somebody has to do it. Mm-hmm. So,
Yeah, sometimes that's where it falls. And I can say that I have very few students at Tech who just come straight out and say, I'm going to be the principal. You know, and if you think about going back to those elementary kids, I think there are probably very few elementary kids who say, I want to be the principal of this school, or I want to be the director of schools. It's just not a common thing that you think of, but a lot of people end up on that career path in education because you find that skill set, or you find that thing that you do well and get elevated to those positions.
Right.
Is how it seems to flow along
yeah.
the way. So one of the questions that I always ask everyone is about a favorite teacher. So who was your favorite teacher growing up? I assume you went to Overton County Schools.
I did. I started out at Alpine Elementary, which was closed by the time I was in seventh grade. But that is where my elementary favorite teacher was taught, and her name was Faye Franklin. And then my high school favorite teacher was Pat Grimes. So...
either one of those teachers tell you that you would be a good teacher?
No, and at the time, I don't even think I wanted to be in education. That really wasn't. I loved school. I played school when I was not in school, but it was not. I wanted to be an attorney. I loved to argue.
Okay.
It was just one of those things that I wanted to be an attorney, but I didn't continue on. I didn't go to law school, so.
Okay. Well, and so did you go straight into education after you graduated?
I didn't. I was actually pre-law my first year at Tech. And then I was married. We decided to go ahead and have a family while I was still in school. Mm-hmm. And so you change when you mm-hmm. have kids. You want to be with your kids. So that's kind of my decision.
Yeah, it does. It does change things, certainly, when a family comes into play. Well, and as temporary interim director of schools, you will get a lot of chances to argue, I'm sure. Because there are a lot of opinions, regardless of anything that you do as a director, there are a lot of opinions.
Yeah, it's probably not good that you argue, though. You just listen.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay, so then if you've been teaching for in education for about 23 years, which you said, so how do you think things have changed? How does it look different? So you see, as supervisor of instruction, you see all the classrooms in the district, probably attend a lot of regional things, talk to a lot of other supervisors and directors. How do you think things have changed, good or bad, from the time you started in the classroom?
I think education has changed a lot. Of course, you know, you're using more technology, things that we didn't have. Cell phones are becoming, a nightmare, quite frankly. And, of course, we have the new cell phone policy that we just met with our principals about, and I just handed them some options and said, okay, let's decide where we're going to go this year and present that to the board. And I've been watching other districts having to come up with the same type plan. And I don't know. I think there's so many students that they have so many options. We didn't have all those options. So that's a good thing. And there's paths that we didn't have. But there are also, you know, a lot of kids that are going homeschool, a lot that are the charter school issue. So there's some good things. There's some bad things. But I think overall education, I mean, it's like it has really gotten to the point where there's so many good things for kids. Like there's so many different pathways for them. It's not just college or you go to work. So I think that is a major plus. The testing, it's overwhelming. We didn't have that, you know, way long ago. But I think that could change a little bit. I would want that to change, but I don't think that's going to change. So otherwise, I think there's been some good things to happen to education.
Yeah, yeah. And just even since COVID, you know, I feel like there have been major changes.
Oh, absolutely.
But when you back up across 20 years, it's been pretty dramatic. I was talking to the last guest about just the cell phones, how when they first came out, you know, a lot of people, and I'm a ed tech guy, and so I thought there's options. This could be a really good tool for the classroom. And now it's completely swung, you know, full circle. And I saw that Putnam County is they're doing a magnet lockable bag, and so they're just going to lock them down. So they're locked in case there's an emergency. But I think that White County is leaning more towards having them put up during instructional time, but then possibly allowing some use. It's a lot to manage.
It is.
Where do you think, what are y'all discussing at this point?
So we decided that we were going to pose not allowing them at all during the day, whether it's instructional time or non-instructional time, mainly because videoing, taking pictures, social media, bullying, you know, videoing kids fighting in bathrooms, doing things on the playground that they shouldn't be doing. We felt like that if we were going to allow it for any point in time, I would rather allow it during instructional time when a teacher has allowed them to maybe use it for a calculator or use it for research, versus letting them use it in the halls because they're going to the bathrooms and they're going outside and things happen. And so, but I didn't want to make any of those decisions. I just said, okay, let's all agree. Everybody look at them and let's read over them and let's come to an agreement as a team. No, I didn't want to even give my input until we all decided what we wanted to do. And I like what we came up with, but we, you know, it hasn't been passed by the board. We have not even shared it with the board yet because we actually just did it this week. So,
Yeah. And it's to me one of those legislative pieces that it has so many trickle down effects. You know, just because in principle, I don't disagree with the legislator that they're distracting, but then to just say they're banned during instructional time and then you all figure it out across several hundred school districts. It's so difficult. And I feel like a lot of times in education, K-12 and higher ed, that we get a lot of things from the legislators and then we just have to try to figure them out. you know, make the best of it. Sometimes I agree, sometimes I disagree, but it's law right. at that point, and we just work through it.
I think our elementary schools were already doing that, so they're not going to have an issue. It's going to be the same as what we've always done. The high school, I looked at my principal yesterday, and I was like, you're going to spend a lot of time in the office taking up phones and having mm-hmm. – I mean, it's going to be an issue for a while. That might be your entire year
mm-hmm.
Until we can kind of get used to it mm-hmm. or we decide we're going to do some sort of locked device. And that's expensive.
It is.
So
– yeah, you're going to have to hire an assistant principal for cell phone management.
Exactly.
That would be an interesting title to have to deal with. But yeah, you do have the expense of the cases, even with Putnam County's cases. I'm not sure how much in the end they'll spend on them, but you know, CHS is a big school, and so having to have every single student. And I even thought about, you know, if you put phones in a central location, then you've got a traffic jam of people trying to, you know, take care of all that in the mornings. And I still think that there will be, you know, a lot of those fine print, the details that you'll have to sort out.
Well, and you're coming and going. You've got TCAT, you've got Vol State, you know, so, you know, your dual enrollment kids, they may have to leave like within the first hour of school. So you mm-hmm. can't just, you know, who's going to manage that?
Mm-hmm.
So if you do use, because we talked about, you know, for testing, you use those little totes that mm-hmm. you can put them in. Who's going to house them? Are we going to put them all in the office and then we got to just go through them?
Mm-hmm.
So it would be a nightmare. So we're going to try just letting them keep them, but they keep them off and put away. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. And then adapt just like we
exactly.
do as any good educator. So, okay, well, we're going to take a short break and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about Overton County Schools.
Okay.
Welcome back to Local Matters. I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt, talking with Ms. Dillon. Overton County Schools Interim Director of Schools currently. So we were just talking about technology and dealing with the phones, dealing with all those things. So that's a whole episode probably talking about what that looks like with technology. And so with that, one of the things that you'd mentioned was TCAT students coming and going. So one of the best parts, I think, now of having those partnerships with TCAT, with AP, all those pieces open opportunities, open doors for high school students. I don't really feel like when I graduated, I had all those opportunities. And I think it's important now that we tell students, do something post-secondary. Do TCAT, do community college, do university. One of those things. You know, you should do something after high school to increase, you know, to have a good productive job and contribute to society. So what are the types of things that you all are doing, or who are you working with? Where are you seeing people go? What kind of skills, what kind of programs do you have in Overton County? It's a big question. Sorry.
Oh,
that's a lot
is.
Of parts.
Yes.
There's a lot of parts.
We're very fortunate, obviously, because we're right across the street from TCAT. Ball State is right down the road. Those two pieces in itself, That's awesome for our district. So we are able to get a lot of students to be interested in going to TCAT, and a lot of them can finish by the time they graduate high school, which is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just go into their job because they did all the TCAT classes while they were in school. And then in Ball State, there's a lot of them that are already graduating that could go on and be – we just started a Grow Your Own program, one of our girls had already – she just graduated high school. She was going to go through Ball State and Austin Peay, and it was a three-year program. Well, she was already finished at Ball State, so she went on to Austin Peay earlier. So now she's going to be, after this year, she'll be ready to teach. She'll be done.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot quicker for her because she had taken all the dual enrollment classes
mm-hmm.
in school. So they do have all of those opportunities. And then with AP, we've used AP Access for All. We have AP teachers at our high school. We have a teacher at the high school, Nate Kennard. He's amazing. He is over all of our AP. AP Access for All helps the students to find the courses, enroll the students, keeps up with them, making sure that they're staying on task and, you know, staying up with their work, as well as our dual enrollment kids. And then So we're able to have them to be able to take those AP exams at the end. And then we had huge success with our AP test scores this year. And then also he's wanting to do an AP Academy starting at the high school next year. And we had several teachers interested in teaching an AP course. So we'll be able to offer even more.
So what is an AP Academy? What does that look like?
Well, so he has a whole binder on it. So okay. He would be the person that would need to come in here and talk about it. And he would. I mean, if you ever want to talk to Nate Kinnard, he's the most passionate person I've ever been around. He has actually agreed to be our guest speaker at our mandated in-service. He's phenomenal. So he can put chill bumps on you just talking about his passion for teaching. So
okay. We'll sign him up.
You should. And he can tell you all about what his AP Academy is going to look like. But I think it's going to be great if he can ever get it started and get enough kids that are actually interested in taking those AP courses. Mm-hmm. And it would kind of follow them along. It would be a cohort kind of group. I know that part.
Okay.
And those kids would follow along in that AP line. But he's more equipped to talk about that than I am.
Sure. How do you get students interested? More interested in AP in general, because I know Overton County is fairly rural, and I grew up in a rural district also, and I feel like it could be a challenge to convince the students it's going to be a value to you to do an AP history course and take the exam. How do you do that? How do you sell that?
So first of all, it helps having somebody who does it in the classroom. So rather mm-hmm. than taking the EOC, which that I guess that's going away because now, you know. But before, rather than taking the EOC, they could take the AP. They would take the AP test. So that was beneficial to have somebody in the building who was teaching that course and could give that test at the end. And then when AP Access came and we all met, and they were able to offer classes that we couldn't offer at our school, which is huge because you can't find teachers to teach specific things in high school. You just can't. I mean, just to find a psychology teacher or, mm-hmm. you know, things that you just don't think about. And then when you have students who are interested in taking those and you give those options to them, and it is a select few. You have... So typically our guidance counselors are the ones to say, hey, you'd be great doing this program, looking mm-hmm. at these AP classes, because they know those kids. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where it starts, through our AP teacher and also through our guidance counselors who know those kids and know what they can do.
Mm-hmm. And work closely.
Yeah.
And it's nice to have so many options. I mean, it's changed so much so quickly. And again, I feel like COVID kind of supercharged it. You know, giving additional options and having some online programs. And do you have students who are at the high school who are doing online work for more advanced classes? Are they taking any classes out, you know, outside of the system?
There are several that will take those AP classes that are through AP Access. So those are online.
Okay.
A lot of times they'll come in. They may come and sit in like the computer lab or in a classroom or in the library. Or they'll stay at home mm-hmm. and take them and then come in, kind of like a dual enrollment type mm-hmm. thing if they were going to Vol State, because a lot of those classes are online as well. Mm-hmm. But they don't actually have to come into the building or go into Vol State's building because there's more things online now. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do some of the high school students leave the high school and go across to Vol State or TCAT, you know, several
yes.
times a day?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that is convenient to have,
yes.
have them mm-hmm. so close right there next to you. So one of the other areas that I had made a note on was that your test scores, and I know that all the school districts are getting all their test scores in and all their reports, that you had increases in ELA and math scores in several different areas. Mm-hmm. So some of the LEd, some of the middle school. What do you think's driving that? Is it specific curriculum, or what do you think has driven those changes? Any thoughts on it?
I think... Of course, it fluctuates every mm-hmm. year. You know, like mm-hmm. you may have like you may have an increase in your ELA in your lower grades one time, and then the next year you'll have increases. So it does fluctuate. I think when you have so many changes and so many teachers that are moving from one subject to another, one grade to another, it makes a difference. So when you have some consistency, I think having a little more consistency, putting teachers in the right spots, that helps, especially in certain grades. So having a high-quality instructional material, we have our ELA and math curriculum. I think that's been huge. So, and just knowing how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So the
mm-hmm.
training and knowing and getting more familiar with it mm-hmm. helps. So.
Yeah. And is that something you just recently adopted, or have you had it in place for a little while?
The math we've had for the last, that last year was our second year. And then, of course, ELA we've had a while, but with lots and lots of changes throughout, I think that came into play as far as the movement of our scores.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take a short break, and then we'll come back and wrap up with the last segment.
Okay.
Welcome back to Local Matters. I'm your host, Jeremy Wendt, talking with Kim Dillon from Overton County Schools. So let's talk teachers a little bit. So one of the things that I spend every day doing is trying to recruit more teachers, always getting phone calls from districts who need teachers. We have more people in the job embedded and post-bac program now than I do people coming in as freshmen to be teachers. So the landscape has changed, especially since you and I first got into education many, many years ago. So what are you all doing in Overton County to help recruit teachers? I know you mentioned Grow Your Own. What other things are you doing or thinking about doing?
So we have the TAPS program at the high school. It's not as successful as we want it to be, but we are trying to promote that a little more each year. I harass Tennessee Tech and Amy Brown constantly trying to say, hey, we need mm-hmm. some people. But we've been posting some jobs lately, and we've had a lot more names on there than what we're used to getting. But we've had to go the permit route. We've had to do the job embedded route. We did clinical practice. Mm-hmm. We have several of those.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. It's tough. And one of the questions on my interview last night was, how are we going to retain teachers? And, I mean, my best answer to that is we've got to have a good, strong culture in every building, and teachers need to feel respected, and they need to feel like they mean something in their job, and they've got to want to be there, and they've got to want to come every day and love it and love the kids. But, you know, it's just harder and harder.
Mm-hmm. And really two things that you mentioned there, recruitment and retention, because I feel like that, at least for us, once we send them to you, you know, a lot of the retention part is out of our hands. You know,
correct.
That we play a role in some ways, but mm-hmm. for the most part, you know, we pass that off. And so the recruitment piece, I feel like the TAPS programs are a good thing. I mean, just in general, exposing people to teaching, I think is a positive for the most part. Mm-hmm. I think we have to do better. I think we, as educators, have to be better advocates for people that we see that potential in. I think that seeing those students that we know would be a good teacher, and really focusing on encouraging and drawing them into the profession because of the positive side. I mean, there are negatives, and I always, we try to be very honest with students and people who want to be in education. It's not an easy. I mean, it's a difficult profession, but it's also very rewarding. And so, trying to convey that message, I don't think we do that as well as we should.
Right.
These days.
I hear a lot of, oh, you don't want to go into education. You know, I of course, I have been with some of my job embedded people, and I've said, maybe you all should do a talk, because they have some experience being in the corporate world, mm-hmm. you know. And so while we deal with children and parents, they're dealing with the public, you know, and they're in that, you know, 40-hour week job every day, Monday through Friday, all year long. And then they come into education, and they're seeing it differently.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, you know, you don't know how good you have it till you know. And it's it's kind of one of those things where that we don't really have anything to compare it to because that's what we've always done. And it's changed. I mean, granted, it has changed and it is harder and the state continues to make it harder. So I don't want to say that it's not a hard job. It is. But pretty much every job is hard. And so it's just kind of, is this what you really want to do? And when you decide it is what you really want to do, you just got to make the best of it. You just got to come in and you got to be happy about it and set the tone for the day, every day. And that's just kind of my philosophy on things. So,
well, and having, in my mind, the rewards, you know, having a difficult job, having a busy job, hectic job, all those things are going to come with most any profession.
Correct.
You know, but then to me, the reward is having, you know, making those connections with the students and seeing those positive things, running into, you know, a successful graduate, someone who's a student that you encouraged and now they've graduated from TCAT or from college and they've landed a good job and, you know, all those things that you can see, those rewards are there where I don't feel like you can always see that in other professions. I feel like that piece is there, the intrinsic piece that you don't always get in other professions. And I think we have to really emphasize that.
I think that it a lot of times you do get bogged down with just like test scores, because I mean, if you have a year where it was just a tough year and you have really low test scores, well, you might not see the reward that year, but if you wait long enough, you're going to see that reward because that kid is really may not have gotten where you wanted them to that year. That whole class may not have. But eventually, you did make a difference, you know, look at them now. But it could be a long time. So I think that's hard for teachers because I just don't think that the education profession is as appreciated and respected as it once was. Not by all. I'm just saying by some. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things that it's not one of those professions where you put it in the top five respected professions like it used to be. I do feel like, I mean, I completely respected my teachers. I worship them. And I just feel like it's different. It's just different now.
And I don't know how to, and we just talked about that with the last guest, how that level of professionalism, it's overlooked now, you know, where I feel like in times past and you know, we reminisce, but we feel like, you know, used to there was more of a respect for the professionalism, you know, the amount of training and professional development and education, all those things that you have to do to become a teacher, it's a lot.
It is.
I mean, in there is a level of expertise, and I think people forget that sometimes. It's not well reflected in society in general, which is unfortunate. Sometimes, you know, depending on the pay scales, it's not reflected. I think that's something that the state of Tennessee has at least put some money towards and tried to work towards increasing those pay scales. Do you have any bonuses, any signing bonuses? I've seen some districts who will have $3,000 or $4,000 signing bonus for some of those high need areas.
We have
areas.
Worked our high need areas into our differentiated pay.
Okay.
So if there's a certain area that we have struggled hiring year after year after year, we put that in our differentiated pay plan. So they do get a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't done the signing bonuses yet.
Yeah.
But.
And there's so many things that so many different districts are trying because they are desperate to hire teachers. And all of my incoming students – I always tell them, you know, you'll get a job. It's just a matter of where and how quickly you get a job. But we've had out of state employers at our career fair. We had districts from Texas and Virginia. At one point, a Texas district was paying a $10,000 down payment on a home.
Oh, wow.
That was their signing bonus. They just wrote you a check for $10,000 to move to their district and be a teacher. And so the incentives. It's funny to see because 23 years ago, that was not. I mean, we didn't have a career fair 23 years ago. There was no need because there were plenty of candidates for each position along the way. How do you mentioned job embedded? How do you feel that the job embedded, the clinical practice, do you think those are all kind of short-term solutions, or do you think that those are really filling in the gaps for needing more teachers in the classroom?
For the most part, they have filled in the gaps, and a lot of them are loving it and staying and doing very well. But we have a retired teacher that we have that coaches our new teachers. Mm-hmm. So that has really helped. Mm-hmm. He goes and he visits every new teacher frequently. That's his daily job. He watches them, coaches them, you know, mentors them. They also have like a mentor within the building as well to support them. But, you know, and it's hard. And I have to remind principals, you know, they're coming from the corporate world. So they mm-hmm. know nothing. Mm-hmm. So you need to treat them like they know nothing. And so we had one teacher who started at the high school, and her whole first week, the principal had a sub in her classroom, and she went room to room and visited classrooms, learned about classroom management, you know, like what does it look like? What does a classroom look like? She'd never mm-hmm. even subbed before. And that was very beneficial for her. So mm-hmm. I'm hoping that the other principals, after we talked about that, that the other principals say, oh, yeah, that was a great idea. That's what I'm going
to
do.
So mm-hmm. Yeah, just to get that insight. And they really are, I mean, the job embedded especially are starting from scratch. You know, at least with our undergrad students, I know that I've put them in a classroom on several occasions, and they've heard some theories and they've applied some things. And so at least when they come in, regardless of how prepared they are, they've had some level of preparation before they come in. But with a job embedded person, I mean, they may have been working at a bank, and I've literally seen this happen, working at a bank or at Fleet Guard on Friday, and they're teaching a class full of 35, 17-year-olds on Monday morning.
Right.
You know, and it can happen that quickly. And then they work on their preparation. And so you're almost building the plane as you're flying it.
Right.
In a lot of cases. And I think that hopefully we'll see success. And we have seen success because some of those job embedded people have life experiences that they can bring and help with the classroom.
Yeah, so, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
Well, I appreciate you coming out. We've about reached the end of our time, and best of luck with the school year this year, whatever that may bring. I'm sure that everything will work out in time, and you'll have a great year.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.